KMAN.
Good morning. You're listening to In Focus right here on News Radio KMAN. I'm Andrew Shores, and here during the first segment of the program, I'm going to be joined by Marty Vanier. And Marty, of course, is the NBAF Director of Partnership Development. And if you have any questions relating to NBAF, be sure to give us a call, 785-537-1350. And Marty, it's always a pleasure when we get you on the air to talk about this ongoing development, if you will. It's kind of that mystery on the North Campus corridor. And as Dave and I were talking earlier this morning, it's a concrete mystery at this point. There's still concrete flowing and pumping. And can you maybe give us an update just on the skeletal construction of the facility? Because as we all know, the pouring and the cranes, it's just been a very long period of construction.
It has, Andrew. Thanks so much. One of the fun facts about NBAF is that the construction manager has estimated that by the time the building is finished, they will have poured 60,000 cubic feet of concrete, which for people who pour concrete for a living, that's an enormous amount of concrete. So yes, there are trucks running back and forth all the time, concrete pumpers all the time, because now we're above ground. And we're beginning to pour the upper levels of the building, the interstitial space and the air handling space. So that is clearly a couple of stories above ground, and you need pumper trucks to be able to do that. The other thing about concrete, and particularly pouring concrete this time of year, as concrete cures, it gives off heat. So when we are in deep in summer in Kansas when it's 90 degrees, that's difficult for the concrete to cure properly because it's trying to give off heat and yet the environment is very hot. So oftentimes they schedule those concrete pours to begin very, very early in the morning and then quit by midday or early afternoon so that the concrete has a chance to cure by the time they need to pour again the next day. So oftentimes you will see the trucks moving really, really early in the morning and then ending about lunchtime. That being said, there have been some of those concrete pours that have to be done, and you have to pour the entire section of concrete before you can walk away and let it cure. So there have been some concrete pours that have been 24 and 48 hours long, where trucks are coming constantly because you have to pour the entire section and let it cure in one piece.
All this concrete pouring, it really just sounds like the math problem I never wanted to have to solve when you talk about a 60,000 cubic feet worth of concrete. And I know this has been underway for just a little over a year with the concrete pouring, right?
Yes, and we still have quite a bit of time to go yet.
Do you have an estimate, maybe another year or 2 years or...
Well, we certainly will be pouring concrete through the rest of this year. I suspect after we get to the first of the year, when we get into 2018, it'll begin to slow down, because at that point, then we'll be starting to do a lot of the interior work, pulling electrical wires, IT cabling, plumbing, all of that sort of stuff. So that those sorts of things will start to begin. Some of them have started now, but that will really go on in earnest beginning next year.
Well, and Marty, we've been talking so much about the exterior of NBAF, all the concrete pours. You're starting to turn your focus inward, and that has kind of started with the awarding of a contract for some of these services. And maybe just describe more about that, because if you think 60,000 cubic feet of concrete is a lot to handle, I can't even imagine all the tiny moving parts that must take place inside. And you found someone to kind of take care of that, right?
Well, we have. We have awarded the first big contract for NBAF. And, of course, it's the government, so there is an acronym. And the acronym is OPTIC, which stands for Operational Planning and Technology Integration Contract. That contract was awarded in April to a company called Merrick. And I can describe a little bit about Merrick a little later, but that contract is meant to do several really important things. It will help us design and describe an operational framework. So if you think about, so for you, Andrew, and Dave, if you think about how the radio station works, Who unlocks the door in the morning? Who makes the coffee? Who takes care of the technology here, because you have a lot of technology here? Who takes care of the sound equipment? How do you book your guests for the shows? All of those various kinds of functions that have to do with how the radio station operates, we have to do those same sorts of things for NBAF. So that's a large part of what this contract will do, is to start to describe and write about how the building is going to operate. The other really important part of this is that, as you might imagine, consistency through the planning process into the actual operations of the building, when scientists come in and are actually working, consistency and institutional knowledge are really critical. You don't want someone coming in early in the process of planning and then leaving after a couple of years, and then 4 more years down the road, you're trying to, you know, you're sitting there going, okay, now I don't really understand what this meant. You want a lot of consistency and institutional knowledge. So the OPTIC contract is actually a 10-year contract, starting this spring and going to through 2022 when we stand up. But the OPTIC contract will run out then in 2026. And part of that's intentional, because we want to have that consistency and we want to have that institutional knowledge moving from just planning the functions and the operations of the laboratory to actually executing the functions and the operations of the laboratory.
Well, and when you think about, so right now we have a skeleton of a building, essentially, or we will soon have a skeleton of even more of a building. And so planning out the functions inside, are there any other tangible initiatives that this OPTIC group has completed that we can maybe relate to NBAF? Have they done other laboratories, or have they done other buildings?
Indeed, they have. Merrick is an international company that provides professional services to science programs, to the energy and chemical sector, national security, other infrastructure agencies. So their unit, their life sciences unit, is the unit that will be working with us to do the planning for NBAF. They work with science and technology clients around the world, and those services include program management, which is what we're doing, planning, design, commissioning, and I've talked in previous shows about what commissioning means for NBAF. So they've done commissioning, they've done training, they've done operational support for a variety of very complex scientific facilities around the world, including other biological containment laboratories. So they have a very deep history, a very, very solid scientific background and stable of folks who are expert in a variety of areas that we need to do operations for NBAF.
So how did you go about selecting your partner for these services? I'm assuming you had to put out a request for proposal, but that is something that's highly specialized when you consider the services that NBAF provides and what's going to need to happen inside of this building.
That's right. There was a request for proposal, and it was very specific about what we needed. The competition was pretty fierce, as you might imagine, though there are not hundreds of companies in the world that could do this kind of work. So the pool that came in with proposals was not large, but they were all very excellent companies that wrote great proposals. And through the process, which is a process that I was not involved in, but through the process, it became very clear that Merrick had the skills and the abilities that we needed to execute this particular contract and provide the services that we needed.
Well, and when you talk about the stiff competition, was there anything that maybe set Merrick apart from the competition? Was there just something that they had done before that you wanted them to be able to do for you? What was maybe the identifying quality that led to them assuming this role?
Well, I know that there were some identifying qualities. As I said, I was not part of the selection team, so I don't know what their discriminating factors were. When you do federal acquisitions, there are some very strict rules and requirements with respect to who can write the request for proposal, who is able to see the proposals when they come in, who is able to make the selections. And those of us who are outside of that process really have no input. We don't see the proposals. I never saw any of the proposals that came in. We're not allowed to see them because you want that selection process to be very clean and very straightforward and very fair to all of the folks who wrote proposals. So consequently, I wasn't part of the process. I can't really address anything that happened in the process because I don't know.
I guess one thing that would interest me, you have a skeleton of a building, and now you have a group to kind of organize the innards of this building, from the technology to the daily workings. What do you think some of their first steps are going to be? Because we're still, what, 5 or 6 years out from even having a facility that will be operating.
So I'm glad you asked that question, because there are some very specific things that, in order of priority, that Merrick has been assigned to do. Clearly, the two major goals are providing a framework for a safe and secure operating laboratory. The second thing, as I addressed earlier, was consistency and institutional knowledge through the planning process into flowing into the operational process so that that becomes as seamless as possible. So with that said, there are four tasks that are primary at this point in time. Those things will change as we get a little farther down the road, but right now the primary task is to begin to define the requirements for the request for proposal that will go out by the end of this year, the first of 2018. But it's to define the requirements for the operational contract. So in other words, the contractor that will come in and actually run the building on a day-to-day basis and run it for the USDA scientists and run it for the DHS scientists, we plan to have requests for proposals out by the end of this year, the first of next year. So we have to define that request for proposal. What exactly do we want that operational contractor to be able to do? What do we want them to do? What do we want them to be able to do? Because that contract and the awardee of that contract needs to be flexible enough that we can change as research topics change, or as new diseases are discovered, or if we have any particular disease outbreaks that need to be addressed. So that's the very first thing that has to happen, is to define what that operational contract needs to do so that we can let that out by the end of the year. That's number one. The second thing that we need to do is we need to do plans for select agent registration. And I talked about select agent registration last month. So to be able to move that program ahead and achieve that registration so that we can do research in the building, that's a very long, drawn-out process. That's the next thing that has to happen, is we have to look at when do we want to be registered, and now let's walk backward from that date and plan all of the other milestones and when submissions have to be in and what do the submissions have to include, and bring it back to today so that we know what we have to start doing and what the optic contractor has to start doing right now to get us to select agent registration. Third thing is the biorepository transfer. On Plum Island, as we've discussed before, samples of disease agents are stored and archived, because you never know when you might need to bring out one of those particular strains to help you answer a current question. So you save them. It's like a library. Well, transporting those agents is really critical, because they are all at this point in highly secure freezers that are frozen at minus 80 degrees or below.
You can't just put those in a suitcase and put them on a plane across the country.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we're not putting them in the carry-on and flying them over here. So thinking about how you move those samples and when you move those samples to NBAF is really critical. So that's another item that they're going to help us plan. The last thing that they'll do is they will fully describe the concept of operations. As we talked earlier about how does the radio station operate, how is NBAF going to operate? And so they will fully describe those operations, including roles and responsibilities of the operations contractor, the USDA scientists, the DHS scientists, collaborating partners that may or may not have projects in the building or that we're performing projects for them. Describing all of those relationships will be in the ConOps document.
Well, it's now 9:23 here at News Radio KMAN. We're going to go ahead and take our first break. Speaking now with NBAF Director of Partnership Development, Marty Vanier. Phone lines will be open when we get back, 785-537-1350.
It's Independence Day at Faith Furniture. Declare your independence from high prices with savings up to 50%. Independence from down payments with zero